This truly comes down to a parent's right to choose how they educate their child.
The State House debates school choice or school vouchers, depending on who you ask. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, February 23rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Holly Brooks talks about winning the Berkey and her decision to strike out on her own to compete in long-distance races.
It's really pushed me out of my comfort zone, and it's kind of pioneering in Alaskan sort of way, so it's been rewarding.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer in the United States, but it doesn't have to be. Colorectal cancer screening can prevent cancer by removing polyps before they turn into cancer. Screening can also find this cancer early when treatment works best. So if you're 50 or older, talk with your doctor about which screening test is right for you. More at alaskacolonhealth.org. This message sponsored by Ride for Life.
With a crowd of charter school students in the gallery, the Alaska State House used a school choice resolution as a proxy for a debate on vouchers. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports.
The resolution was offered by Wasilla Republican Lynn Gaddis, and it designates the last week in January as Alaska School Choice Week. The motion specifically recognizes such options as traditional public schools, private schools, charter schools, and home education.
This truly comes down to a parent's right to choose how they educate their child.
Resolutions do not create enforceable statutes or carry real legislative weight. They're mostly a way for lawmakers to express their feelings on an issue. But because legislation that would allow public funding to go to private schools has been introduced in the past, the discussion over School Choice Week took on added significance. Representative Andy Josephson, an Anchorage Democrat, objected to the resolution because of its connection with National School Choice Week. He said that because of its funders, the movement struck him as less grassroots and more astroturf.
The National School Choice Week is actually very corporate. It's very pro-voucher. It's generally anti-labor. It absolutely has an objective, at least partially, to privatize education.
Anchorage Democrat Max Gruenberg had some concerns that a line in the resolution about providing children with multiple educational options could be read as the legislature supporting school vouchers.
That basically can be read and would be read, if this resolution is read carefully, with this legislature getting into areas that have significant constitutional questions.
But Majority Leader Charisse Millett, an Anchorage Republican, pushed back on these interpretations of the resolution. She argued that the opposition was reading text that was not there.
I guess I might have a different copy of the resolution. I'm pretty sure I'm looking at the right one, but nowhere in my resolution, Mr. Speaker, do I see wording of constitutional amendments or vouchers or religious schools or any of that nature.
The resolution ultimately passed 21-14, with all members of the Democratic minority opposing the motion, along with Kodiak Republican Louise Stutes. During the last legislature, Senator Mike Dunleavy, a Republican from the MATSU, introduced a constitutional amendment that would have allowed state funding to go to private educational institutions. The bill made it through hearings in the Senate, but did not have enough support to be scheduled for a vote on the floor. Dunleavy has no plans at this time to reintroduce that amendment. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
Just one day before marijuana possession becomes legal in Alaska, Governor Bill Walker has filed legislation to create a marijuana control board. The board would handle the regulation and licensing of marijuana retailers. It would be independent of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, but the groups would share the same staff within the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Advocates for the marijuana industry have asked that the two substances be regulated separately to reduce potential industry conflicts. The governor has already included $1.5 million in his budget for the cost of regulating marijuana. A lot of questions remain about how marijuana legalization will work. KUAC's Dan Bross reports from Fairbanks.
Like alcohol consumption, marijuana use will be legal for adults, but differences between the two drugs create some challenges for law enforcement, according to North Pole Police Chief Steve Dutra.
There's questions like, what is going to be the legal limit for an impairment? The blood draws and urine testing for DUIs, whether or not they're going to be allowed or not allowed, how is DUI prosecution going to be affected by the lack of clarity in the statutes?
There is some case law history regarding marijuana in Alaska, and Chief Dutra points to legal discrepancies regarding the amounts of marijuana allowed at a home versus carried outside the home on a person. He says the department held a meeting Friday to talk about marijuana legalization.
Went over everything that we know and gave them direction on what is clear, and obviously advised them to trade carefully on what is not clear.
Dutra emphasizes that police want to abide by voters' intent. The North Pole City Council passed an ordinance last week locally defining public places where marijuana consumption is not allowed. The Fairbanks City Council is considering its own marijuana ordinance tonight, and the North Star Borough Assembly also has a marijuana ordinance before it later this week. City of Fairbanks Deputy Police Chief Brad Johnson recently attended a Colorado conference on marijuana legalization. Johnson says one of the issues complicating the drug's regulation is the wide range of ways marijuana can be used.
In Colorado, they've seen everything from cookies to pixie sticks to creams.
Johnson says Alaska is in somewhat of a wait-and-see mode as state legislators craft a bill to clarify marijuana legalization.
To figure out how we should proceed in some of these gray areas.
There's some breathing room on one aspect of legal marijuana. The ballot measure provides for commercial cultivation and retail sale of the drug, but that portion of the law does not take effect until next year. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Bethel's district attorney has been fired by the state of Alaska. While working in the office Sunday, June Stein received a letter from a deputy attorney general of her, quote, impending release. Stein says she plans to continue working until March 9th. That's the date the state set as her last day. She served as Bethel's district attorney since 2009. A spokesperson for the Department of Law was not able to comment Monday afternoon. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, an artist couple from Haines who create huge mosaic murals for schools.
To do something so big and then see the finished product is really thrilling.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. And by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on Condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
For the last 7 years, Alaska has offered financial incentives to draw filmmakers and reality TV crews to the state. But as lawmakers scramble to fill a widening gap in the budget, Alaska's film tax credit program is on the chopping block. Governor Bill Walker has proposed cutting three positions from the Alaska Film Office without auditors and accountants to help review information from production companies. The program would essentially go on hiatus. The film office had been authorized to grant up to $200 million in tax vouchers before it's set to expire in 2018. Just 10% of available tax credits have been dispersed. Instead of leaving them on the table, Senator Bill Stoltz of Chugiak has introduced a bill that would eliminate the program immediately. In testimony to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee on last Thursday, Stoltz said the state can't afford to do otherwise.
It's not like there's $170 or $180 million sitting there now, but it's further exposure to our treasury as tax credits slash subsidies are approved, and I don't think it's sustainable.
This isn't the first time Stoltz has made that argument or attempted to repeal the tax credits. He and other lawmakers have questioned whether the program creates jobs for Alaskan crew members. According to the film office, about 90 residents worked on TV shows or films that qualified for incentives last year. Those productions had another 60 employees come from out of state. Stoltz told the Labor Committee that film production has clear financial rewards for Alaska's service industry, like hotels and caterers.
There are Alaskans that that have participated and benefited, but it's up to you as policymakers to determine whether or not this is the most appropriate way to spend scarce resources.
The Labor and Commerce Subcommittee will be taking public testimony on the film tax repeal tomorrow. Ketchikan Superior Court Judge William Carey heard arguments Friday over whether he should approve a stay of his January decision that the state of Alaska's requirement that local communities provide a specific amount for public education violates the Alaska Constitution. KRBD's Layla Carey attended the hearing and has this report.
Catherine Vogel is an assistant attorney general with the Alaska Department of Law, and she argued on behalf of the state. Participating by phone from Juneau, she argued that the state clearly would be irreparably harmed if a stay is denied, the borough would not suffer if a stay was approved, and that the state believes it has a good chance of succeeding in its appeal to the Alaska Supreme Court. Those are the three legal elements needed for a stay to be approved. Vogel says the stay is extremely important because the legislature needs to know now what to do about funding public education for the entire state.
The governor's budget and the governor's revised budget did not provide for any other source of funding to help fill the gap that requires local contributions currently filled.
The state funds the largest portion of the annual bill for public schools, but historically, boroughs and first-class cities have been required to pay the equivalent of a 2.65 mil property tax. That's what Carey ruled is unconstitutional, but the state wants the requirement to remain in place until the Supreme Court finally decides the matter. The borough's attorney, Lou Ann Cutler, had a different take on pretty much everything Vogel argued. Cutler says there is no irreparable harm to the state because the legislature is free to provide as much or as little for public education as it wants.
The legislature legislates. The court makes legal decisions. And you've already made a difficult one, and you've got to make another difficult one after you hear our arguments. But defendants have not met their burden to establish that a stay is necessary just because there's a lot of money at stake.
Cutler pointed out that nobody from the legislature has intervened or submitted an affidavit on the state's behalf in this case, nor have any school districts or members of the public. State attorneys also have filed a motion for a stay with the Alaska Supreme Court, but the High Court announced that it would wait and see what Carey decides before making its own ruling on the motion. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Holly Brooks won the 51-kilometer American Birkebeiner ski race in Hayward, Wisconsin this Saturday. Brooks is leading the International Ski Federation, or FIS, Marathon Cup, competing in long-distance races in Europe, the U.S., and later this spring, Russia. She gave up her spot on the U.S. ski team to pursue an overall win on the Marathon Cup this season. Brooks has won the Berkey one time before and finished second by a few inches another year. She says this year's race was a great experience.
Everyone always talks about Berkey fever. And the best way for me to describe it to Alaskans is it's like Mount Marathon and the hype around Mount Marathon, but for skiing. And I was really excited to come because I came to Hayward straight from France, and I had been racing in Europe for a couple of weeks. So it was great to kind of set my feet down on home soil and got there, and everything was great. The snow conditions are great, but it was freezing cold. So literally just 2 days before the race, woke up and it was minus 30 Fahrenheit without the wind chill. So conditions were a little bit challenging. But luckily on race day, it was above zero, and I think it was 12 degrees at the start and snowing lightly. So the conditions for the race were absolutely great.
Well, Holly, you're leading the Marathon Cup. What has it been like to be off the U.S. ski team pursuing this separate track?
It's a whole new adventure. And, you know, post-Sochi, post-Olympic year, I just felt like I wanted a new challenge, something to kind of spice it up. And, you know, it was hard leaving the U.S. team. I love my teammates. The coaches are great. And the World Cup circuit is challenging for sure, but it also offers a lot of security. You have a wax tech. You have coaches that really figure out all the logistics for you. And it's just your job to ski. And my transition to the FIS Marathon Cup has been entirely different. It's my job to ski, but it's also my job to make all the travel arrangements, figuring out where I'm going to stay and who's going to wax my skis. And, you know, it's someone different each race. And sometimes there's the language barrier to deal with. And logistically and mentally and physically, emotionally, it's a whole new challenge. And so I'm pretty satisfied with the change. And it's really fun to chase the podium.
It sounds sort of like you're a freelancer having to do so much by yourself. Have there been moments when you questioned your decision to leave the U.S. ski team?
Yeah, you know, I'm still, it's funny, I don't really consider myself as off the U.S. ski team, and even though I totally am. I still call them my teammates, and, you know, I do think that I'm their biggest fan. And, you know, I miss them, especially during travel or, you know, where the first race in December, I got to the race and I actually didn't know who was going to wax my skis until I attended the coaches meeting the night before and ended up tracking someone down who could wax my skis. So it's moments of stress and hardship like that I really miss the team and the camaraderie and the security. But it's really pushed me out of my comfort zone. And it's kind of pioneering in an Alaskan sort of way. So it's been rewarding.
How has it been, though? Probably an obvious question, but has it been nice to focus on these longer distance races that are more your specialty?
Yeah, it's been really fun doing these races that are 2 and 3 hours. And I've always liked the long distance racing, but on the World Cup, girls get to race 2 30Ks a year. That's all. And so I always looked forward to those long races and felt like I never got enough of it. And so, you know, now I'm getting to race long distances every weekend. And, you know, I think I'm suited for it, but it's also, there's also been a kind of a steep learning curve, with kind of feeding during the races and how to prepare physically and mentally for the races. And then also what it takes for your body to recover from, you know, a hard 3 hour effort. It's different than a 10K. So it's been a marathon of marathons in some ways.
Cross-country skier Holly Brooks has 3 more Marathon Cup races to go in Europe and Russia. Brooks says she's going to finish this season and then decide what's next for her.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, gives Alaska Native students the inspiration and opportunity to excel in science and engineering careers, building a sustainable future for Alaska. More at ANSEP.net. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
The 2015 PFD filing season is here. If you have questions about your absences or someone you know away at college or serving in the military, the State of Alaska Department of Revenue encourages you to be proactive. Check out the absence guidelines before applying for your PFD. Visit pfd.alaska.gov and click on eligibility in the banner to learn more. The deadline to apply is March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
State environmental officials and the U.S. Coast Guard are investigating an oil spill at Satter Harbor in Juneau's Auk Bay. Sarah Moore is a spill prevention coordinator with the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. She says people first noticed a rainbow sheen and heavy black oil in the harbor sometime on Sunday.
It looks to be some kind of a used motor oil is our best guess at the time, and we're still trying to identify the source.
The Coast Guard notified DEC of the spill after receiving a report about 7:30 last night. But by the time officials arrived, Moore says it was too dark to start cleanup. She says the sheen was originally estimated at 500 feet by 1,000 feet, but it's hard to tell how much oil spilled. By this morning, she says the heavier oil was mostly collected in the corners of the floats at Statter Harbor. Moore says the oil most likely came from a vessel. DEC and the Coast Guard are investigating the exact cause. She says there have been no reports of impacts to wildlife. Middle school students from around the state are participating in the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program at UAA this year. 48 students from the Lower Kuskokwim and Northwest Arctic Borough completed the two-week residential program on Friday, but their learning doesn't stop there. KSKA's Ann Hillman reports.
A group of middle schoolers crowd around two balsa wood bridge models. A box hangs from each one, and two helpers are slowly adding weights to see how much the structures can hold.
Looks like you guys are surviving pretty good so far.
And then suddenly, they go too far. The bridges collapse at the same time, wood spraying the crowd.
Why we wear safety glasses?
The students are testing their final engineering projects to measure the strength of different design types. Most of the bridges held 5 to 10 times more than the students anticipated. Jay Chandler from Scammon Bay, Pius Hoover II from Emonic, and Emily Harry from Alaknok were from the winning team. Their bridge held 187 pounds. They say they liked planning the bridge.
Map out the designs.
Like a blueprint.
Blueprint?
Mm-hmm.
But Pius and Jay say the camp was about more than just that project.
Meeting new people.
Meeting new people, building the computer, and making the bridge.
Yeah, you heard that right. They built computers, too, by putting together wires, motherboards, and chips. They get to keep their new equipment, but in return, they have to promise to finish Algebra 1 before starting high school. An Urban Institute evaluation of the program shows that so far, 77% of middle school participants have followed through. Middle school program director Josephine Madison says ANSEP aims to spark the kids' interest in math and science early, then keep them interested during high school and college.
And so we want students to commit to that higher level math track to better prepare them for those higher level math and science classes at high school, which will have them enter the university prepared.
Wilma Destor with the Lower Kuskokwim School District says the program is motivating her students to stay active in math and science programs. She says they've gone on to the high school accelerated program and participated in statewide science competitions.
When they get home, they inspire other students. They become leaders in their school and in their classroom. And they said, hey, you need to do this. We need to perform well in class because we want you to participate in the ANSEP program because it's a very, very good program.
And what do the kids say they want to do or be in the future?
Go to college and become a teacher.
You know, like becoming a civil engineer.
Probably get a job. In high-paying job?
Building bridges or high-paying job? Being a model?
I don't want to be a model.
What do you want to be?
Probably an engineer.
The ANSEP middle school program started in 2012. They're running 5 sessions this school year and 3 more in the summer. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Alaska law requires 1% of construction costs for public buildings go toward paying for art installations. An artist couple in Haines has found success with the program by creating mosaic murals for schools. They're now working on their 6th project, a mosaic for the Valley Pathway School in Palmer. KHNS's Emily Files visited their studio and has this story.
The sound of it is a lot to do with hearing. If you know you did a good cut, a good score.
Sharon Svensson is cutting strips of bright green glass for the mural she and her husband John are making.
Yeah, do a 1-incher.
They're working on a 4x14-foot mosaic. They started in January, and they're partway done.
If you can imagine, these are flying. We're calling it Taking Flight, and it's a bunch of ravens on this big panel. And then there, behind the ravens are circular shapes, which could be suns or something like that. And in the middle, we've taken a bunch of strips of colors and stuff and then twisted it and gave it this radical swirl. And these swirls...
Spiraling out.
Spiraling.
Black shards of glass form ravens against bright yellow, pink, and green pattern background. The glass is shipped up in sheets from Oregon. The Svensons cut and smooth it into the shapes they need.
Then I go to the grinder. So then you grind it.
Sharon holds up the little green circle of glass she just formed. It took about 2 minutes just to make that tiny circle. So many little pieces go into such a large mosaic. It takes a long time.
Little dab of glue on the back of that. and fit it right into
wherever it goes,
right into there. Poink, there's a piece.
The Svensons work about 5 hours each day for about 4 months on each project, meticulously cutting, smoothing, and gluing colored glass onto a huge piece of plywood. This kind of work has been their main job for the past few years. Here's how the process goes.
We go take the ideas back and forth. You know, if I have an idea, and then he can actually put it down on paper better than I can.
And I'll go out and drop the wall size on a piece of paper and just start drawing on it.
And you get the cartoon all drawn. Then we prepare the plywood. Then you start cutting glass up.
Sharon has been a mosaic artist, or mosaicist, for about 15 years.
It's colorful. It's the depth of the color and the sparkle and it's shiny.
These 1% for the arts projects are some of the largest mosaics she's ever made. She says it is slow work, but when the project is finished, it's a great feeling.
To do something so big and then see the finished product is really thrilling.
John says usually you just hope your pieces will sell, but with these, there's more certainty and stability, which is why they keep applying for the projects.
They pay well.
Yeah, they pay. It's money. When you're bound by contract to the Palmer, that whole borough system, it's pretty serious stuff, and you're signing these huge contracts, but you know in the end, you're going to get paid for it.
The Svensons charge $500 per square foot for their mosaics. The projects usually total between $30,000 and $60,000. But because the materials are so expensive and the work is so slow,
I would say if we can pocket a third of what we're charging, that's pretty darn good. We're working in a really expensive medium.
Once the mosaic is done, the Svensons transport it to the school and install it.
We never breathe a sigh of relief until it's on the wall and the engineer who is involved and the other people look at it and approve it. Stamp of approval, that's what you're always wanting. That's the high moment of the whole thing. Like, yes, we're absolutely done.
And they get to watch the excitement of the students when they see the murals hung up in the hallway for the first time.
Little hands would go up and there were whales and they're pointing at things in it and just seeing what they're focusing
relating
on.
To, yeah.
And the principal later said, like a week later, said the reaction has been way cool.
Sharon and John plan to keep working on 1% program commissions. They have two more in Juneau already booked, which will keep them busy for the rest of the year. One day, Sharon hopes she'll have the time to make a mural like this for their own home. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ben Matheson in Bethel, Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, Casey Kelly in Juneau, Ann Hillman in Anchorage, and Emily Files in Haines. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reported from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a good evening.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
Rural Energy Enterprises, supplying Alaska dealers with fuel-efficient Toyo stoves and Oil Miser heaters for more than 26 years. Local dealers can be found at rural-energy.com.
Alaska Pacific University offers the APU Promise Tuition Grant, a program designed to significantly minimize or eliminate out-of-pocket tuition expenses for Pell-eligible students. Deadline to apply is March 1, 2015. Alaska Pacific University is a private nonprofit offering small class sizes with a student-centered approach in the arts and sciences. More at 1-800-252-7528. This message is sponsored by APU.
Didn't quite catch that report. Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at alaskapublic.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.